This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on August 22, 2013. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next item on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2013-04 from the Democratic Governors Association and Jobs and Opportunity. Do commissioners anticipate having questions for Mr. Elias? Shall I invite him to the table?
Too early to tell. I think we left the ball.
Okay.
Report on what we're going to do with this.
Well, I'm not sure I want it in my court. All right. Well, stay tuned, Mr. Elias. We may invite you to the table. I've been thinking about this a lot, and we had a lengthy discussion last time. And I appreciate the additional comments that were submitted. My problem is that I feel like the argument proves too much, because it seems to me that if Congress has to explicitly state that when it issues a provision that's relevant to a particular organization, that it also covers organizations that are controlled by that organization, organizations that are run by their own officers, then it just becomes too easy for anyone to get out of a restriction by just setting up a subsidiary and having their own officers run it in the interests of the parent organization. So, I'm sure some people find this an easy question, but for me, that second question is a difficult one. But I think I'm not going to shift from where I originally started out on this, which was to basically say no and no. But I'm not sure where anybody else is. Well, I'm sure where some people are, but I'm not sure where everybody else is on that. Mr. Vice Chairman.
It's in the same place I was last time. To address that directly, though, the statute, we're not talking about a vague statute that only sort of throws out general guidance. I mean, we're not the EPA that has sort of a general go and clean the air kind of statutory language. It's a rather complicated statutory scheme that under basic tenets of statutory construction, you have to read the document as a whole, and there are parts in the statute that do expressly talk about certain people being roped in to various restrictions under McCain-Feingold, whether it's agents or whether it's employees. You look at the sort of example, in the coordination context, we have a very specific rule about folks who work for someone, the time period that they could cleanse themselves, for lack of a better term, from a sort of coordination allegation. You have in the fundraising context, the agency is expressly there. But in the issue that we're talking about here, there is nothing in the statute that ropes in employees of the DGA or the RGA or any similar group starting their own thing. So it's not a question of, well, there's some vague language and we're not sure what it means. The language is quite specific in other places, and it's a rather basic canon of statutory construction that when it's specific in one part and not in another, or the absence of another, that tells you what it means. And it means that the answer is not up in the air. The answer here is clear. There's nothing that prohibits these folks from doing what they want to do. And really, it comes back to the fundamental premise of election law. This is not a law that says everything's prohibited unless the FEC grants permission. It's really the inverse. You are free to do what you want unless it's prohibited. And it is Congress that puts in place prohibitions. They did not put in place a prohibition in this case. One looks to the statute. They're just, to me, it's pretty clear answer. The one thing I would like to do, though, I do want to ask Mr. Elias one question since he's here, because he may actually have be able to help me.
Come on down, Mr. Elias. I knew somebody was going to want to ask you something.
You filed some additional comments, which I thought were very helpful. So I guess two questions. I can't remember the statutory canon of construction that I'm referencing, but maybe being a more learned attorney than
unlikely.
I am, since I've been on the bench for 5 years, perhaps...
There's Latin involved.
Yes, and I, being a former Catholic altar boy, not a former Catholic, but a former altar boy, I used to know the Latin Mass, so I usually pride myself in knowing Latin, but exclusio and all that, I don't want to hot dog it and get it wrong. And two, setting aside trying to figure out where four votes would be, this whole argument we had last, this discussion we had last time about whether they're a separate entity under state law and all that, for my purposes, as someone who reads the Act, and I've already stated how I read the Act, that's not really a particular consequence to me, because I see it as a much clearer answer. So if you could maybe flesh out those two points a little bit.
Sure.
That would help my thinking.
Sure. So let me address those in turn. With respect to the first, and this goes to your question and also the concern I think that the chair raised, I think if this tape could be played to Congress in 2002, they would be shocked. I mean, they'd be actually completely shocked, because Congress never intended to federalize state campaign finance law. I mean, the entire, going back to the 1974 Act.
Well, not only that, they assured the world they weren't
that they were not doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, this will be a radical, radical, radical step for the FEC to say that it is going to import agency. Not in the core provisions of the Act, where agency is explicitly spelled out, right? Agents of national party committees, agents of federal candidates, agents of federal office holders. But rather, it is going to import it into what is, after all, the organizations that I'm here representing today, they are not interested in federal elections. They are interested in state elections. And as a anti-circumvention measure itself, the provision we're talking about itself was an anti-circumvention measure. It was simply put in place to prevent federal candidates from controlling state caucus organizations. And now for the commission to say that we're going to ignore that balance. I mean, remember, at the time of McCain-Feingold, it was already seen as a large step towards federalizing a lot of traditionally state activity because of the allocation, doing away with many of the allocations that state parties could have enjoyed under the previous law, and federalizing large chunks of what state parties did. But to then say that the commission is going to take what itself was a bit of a reach, was sort of on the line of permissible regulation, which was the regulation of purely state officials' activity, state candidate activity, and then put an anti-circumvention read not in the statute on top of that. I mean, that just isn't. I think that Congress, frankly, just that is not at all what they had in mind. I mean, I think that this is now two steps. We are now marching two. We have. The federal candidates and the federal elections, which is what we're trying to, principally this agency's jurisdiction is concerned with. And then we have association of state office holders as an anti-circumvention to make sure that they don't circumvent their restrictions. Well, we've already, presumably, question number one I'm not going to prevail on. So now we've moved from that to another organization, which is not an association of state office holders, that has overlapping staff with an association of state office holders. And now we're going to apply agency to that. And boy, that is just a very, very far afield, I think, from where Congress thought. And I'm not in Congress, but I think where Congress was at that time.
But the point I'm making, though, is I'm not relying on some subjective congressional intent of what Congress thought. I'm looking at the structure of the document, right? I mean, there's the plain language of the statute. And then there's legislative history, but
right.
There is this in-between zone where you look at structure of the document, and there are these statutory canons of construction that, the way I read the statute, come out all pointing the same direction, which is the direction you ultimately want. But I'm not even getting to what Congress had in mind or any of that. I'm asking specifically about how to read the law.
Right. I think the law, honestly, if this organization, if this agency tried to enforce this provision against, first of all, I seriously doubt. In the cold light of day, I have a feeling Mr. Heckler would arrive in one door and Mr. Cheney would arrive in another door because your counsel would tell you behind closed doors, if you tried to enforce this statute, you'd get the whole statute struck down. This is such a read. The statute is plain on its face, to your point, Mr. Vice Chair. The statute does not cover anything other than association of state office holders. And if you look at draft B, which is presumably the alternate that is at issue here, it doesn't cite anything that ties this statute to agents acting on behalf of, or agents not acting on behalf of, or entities established, financed, maintained, or controlled. There is nothing that moors the concepts of 441I, which affect national parties and state candidates, where those have direct application, and apply it to this provision, which does not. So I think you don't need to get beyond the plain language of the statute. I completely agree. My only point is that I am a little bit concerned that some of the comments may have suggested sort of this is atmospherically what we ought to care about. And honestly, I was not in Congress, I've never been in Congress, so I can only speak for what I observed from the outside. This is not at all what I think Congress thought they were doing with vis-a-vis state election officials and organizations that are not, in this case, even controlled by or have members of state election officials and who have disavowed doing a PASO activity, even though they wouldn't be required to disavow that under the law, to give this commission kind of further comfort about what their focus is. Their focus is gubernatorial elections. Golly gee, to say it politely, what is the Federal Election Commission struggling with an organization that just wants to affect governor's elections?
Yeah, golly gee. So what you're addressing in part is those who love to invoke the spirit of McCain-Feingold. You hear this language time and time again. And what you're saying, this isn't even the spirit of McCain-Feingold. This is some ghost in the haunted house that only Scooby-Doo and Shaggy would find worth pursuing.
I am firmly on the spirit of McCain-Feingold. There is no question in my mind. There is no question. If you want the purpose and the spirit of McCain-Feingold was never intended. It was I supported McCain-Feingold. My law firm supported McCain-Feingold. My clients, who are federal officials, supported McCain-Feingold. McCain-Feingold was not an effort to federalize purely state election activity. It was an effort to federalize and regulate activity that affects federal elections and some activity that was going to have a mixed purpose. But here you have an organization that is not covered by the already secondary anti-circumvention provision, and it would be just a big jump to now say that the spirit somehow captures that. I just don't think it does.
It reminds me of something that when this happened, there were some of us, me, a couple others, who actually said this federalizes state and local politics. And I recall Senator McCain very publicly saying, no, the Republican lawyers are overstating this. That's not what this does. And I remember actually Congressman Shea is saying the same thing. So even the principal sponsors, at least on the Republican side, said, no, this doesn't federalize everything. Let me suspend reality for a minute, because that tends to happen here more often than not. So it's a comfort zone that I've learned to suspend reality, assume things that aren't true, and then play out the hypothetical. Let's assume you can somehow export an agency concept from one part of the statute to another part of the statute and sort of have the spirit of McCain-Feingold saying this just doesn't seem to be the sort of thing that we should let happen. Even with that concept of agency, that's limited. People can wear more than one hat. Now, what I don't understand is, even if you go down this road of this seems wrong, therefore it is wrong, why we presume that these folks are somehow now suspect simply because they work for the DGA. There's no factual record. There's no facts presented by you. It's your request, so you know the facts better than anyone in the room, which is going to be, I hope, my final question for you. I don't know of any facts that taint these folks or somehow make them suspect, or they want to start their own group And it's easy to say, well, this is, you know, they're just trying to get around things. Well, they're not trying to get around things. They're trying to do things. They're trying to participate in politics. But I don't know of any facts that we can presume them to be guilty of something. Do you?
I don't, and we tried to be constructive based on the last hearing when it seemed like there was a reach, there was a consensus or at least an opening for compromise if we could provide language that would make clear that this would not simply be a pierce the corporate veil alter ego situation. We went, we did the research, we came back, we presented to you, I think in neutral terms. I doubt if the general counsel found a different view of DC law than we did, it should speak up, but laid out what the standard is for something to be pierce the corporate veil or to be alter egos. We offered to put a footnote in that says that if we do those things, then we will have crossed the bridge that for which we don't get protection from the opinion. And I guess I had hoped that we were going to pick up at that point, but I don't know if that's where the commission's thinking still is, or whether there are starker differences.
There's other examples in the law where people can wear more than one hat, right? You can, just even under the statute, if you are a federal office holder running for state office, ordinarily you would be banned from raising certain money, but the law expressly says you can raise money legal under state law. I remember in the McCain-Feingold litigation, McConnell versus FEC, that even the national party chair, the idea of wearing more than one hat was something trumpeted by the government and the interveners as a way to save what could otherwise be an overbroad law. There are other examples out there. I mean, coordination rules is an example.
Right.
It seems to me the law, there's a number of examples where you simply don't presume that someone's tainted and that's the end of the story.
No, in fact, I believe, and I can't remember if it was a MER or an AO, but I believe the commission approved the chief of staff of a sitting member of Congress in Montana as not being an agent of a federal office holder.
Freeburg, AO.
It was an AO.
Yeah. So he wanted to run the state party.
Is that right?
State party chair. And the commission said, okay. So a sitting member's chief of staff could be the state party chair. That was fine. And that's much closer to the McCain-Feingold text and spirit, wouldn't you agree, than your situation?
Look, there's no question. McCain-Feingold aimed to regulate state parties, and it aimed to put restrictions on federal office holders and federal candidates. There is no question about that. That was in some sense the core, one of the core purposes of McCain-Feingold was to regulate state party activity. And indeed, this provision, I believe, had its mission at simply being a way of preventing that from being circumvented. The concern was that the state party provisions would be circumvented by federal candidates simply offloading those activities to organizations of state elected chairs, or state elected officials. So you'd have the state senator from Reno and the state senator from Las Vegas get together, form an association, and then it would be controlled by a federal officeholder, and you'd avoid the allocation rules. That's what this provision was aimed at. We have now, assuming I lose on question one, said, okay, that also applies to the governors, even though they're from multiple states. Fine. But now also an organization that is set up by two people who work for that association but who themselves are not governors, are not on the official staffs, by the way, of governors, are not on the campaign. You know, we're considerably further afield.
I feel like maybe we're talking past each other. I'm not looking for the spirit of McCain-Feingold out there in the atmosphere. I think, you know, I hear the statutory argument. I don't think it's quite as clear-cut as, if indeed the statute were explicit and said, but this doesn't cover organizations established, financed, maintained, and controlled, or their agents or officers, that would be explicit. Then we wouldn't even be having this discussion. I do think that it's a little bit more ambiguous. I'm not discounting the statutory argument, but I do think it's a little bit more ambiguous. My concern is that there's a restriction in the statute, and I'm I don't think it's my job to decide whether that was on the edge of what Congress could permissibly have done or not. It's in the statute. It's been upheld. It's there. Whether Congress would have written any of these provisions had they known that the Supreme Court was going to issue Citizens United and there'd be all these super PACs out there, who knows? But that's not where we are. So my concern is solely on trying to give effect to a provision that is in the statute. I feel like, as I said, that maybe we're talking past each other, because it seems to me that in the request, you have actually posited, and tell me if I'm just getting this entirely wrong, that there would be involvement by the organization. I thought the request stated that, and these aren't two random employees, these are the two top officers of the DGA who would be the principals of Jobs and Opportunity. The group of persons that will decide how J&O spends its money will include DGA officers and other DGA employees. Other DGA employees are likely to play a role in the day-to-day operations of J&O. It's possible that DGA will provide funds to J&O. And then there was this sort of, I didn't know exactly what to make of this statement, that the actual state office holders would generally not play a role in how the funds were spent, although then there was the statement that, well, state law would, and I think, again, the term was generally preclude them, but, generally as in they're not going to do it, or generally as in they might do it, or if state law permits them to do it, they'll get more involved in the organization. That seemed a little bit fuzzy to me, but the way my colleague was describing it, it sounded like, well, two random employees of an organization that was an association of state office holders wanted to go off and do their own thing. That perhaps in combination with other folks who have no relation at all to the DGA. That wasn't the way I read the request. I read the request as two people who are the top officers of the DGA, in light of the fact that the DGA can't do these things themselves. They're going to set up a separate organization, but it's going to be very much informed by their concurrent role as officers of DGA. Now, maybe I'm just, and that's where my problem comes from, because the two organizations seem to me, whether they are, legally set up as separate organizations or not, it still seems to me that they are somewhat intertwined. And maybe that's not what's happening. So that's one concern. And another concern is that while you say they're not going to run PASO ads, your legal argument, as I think you just stated, would in fact permit them to run PASO ads. So if we were to say, based on this statutory argument that officers of an association of state office holders can set up its own organization and they're not subject to 441I, what would preclude another organization from springing up that indeed would be running PASO ads that are about federal candidates?
Well, nothing would prevent that group from setting up, which is why we have so many super PACs, because in fact, thousands of those groups set themselves up right now. This is why this is such, from my perspective, such a odd concern. There is already a mechanism to set up an organization that runs PASO ads, in fact, express advocacy ads that advocate the election and defeat of clearly identified federal candidates for office. There are myriads of them. I've sought advisory opinions on behalf of some of them. Stephen Colbert has sought advisory opinions on behalf of some of them.
Yeah, but he closed.
So the answer is, what would stop them, someone else, from setting up a group? Absolutely nothing. They set them up every day. And that's that. That's why I keep saying this is a very, very narrow question. This is really a question of whether or not the commission is going to take a provision that was aimed at preventing the circumvention of state party allocation rules. So there are no allocation rules for super PACs. Super PACs don't have to allocate. They just spend whatever money they spend. So you have to look at this through the prism of what does this provision do in the law? The law, it is a way to prevent state party allocation rules from being frustrated. Now, I don't actually think DGA is a, as I expressed last time, really poses any risk there, but set that aside. Your point on the plain language of the statute, I get. But if you were going to look at just the plain language of the statute and say, look, let's not worry about what Congress meant, let's not worry about what the intent is, let's not worry about what might have been, what could have been, what should have been, and that's fine. And I wasn't trying to inject that. I was actually trying to respond to what I thought might be motivating some of this. But if you just look at what Congress wrote agents acting on behalf of and establish finance, maintain, and control language very purposely. It just did. I feel very comfortable I have the better of the argument that Congress didn't accidentally not include it here. Like I think they wrote it where they wrote it very purposely where they wanted to count agents and count established finance, maintain, or control. And they just didn't write it in this section. And to say, well, they didn't write the opposite in this section, candidly, with all due respect, Madam Chair, I'm not sure how far that leads you. If you just take a neutral, if I asked you an exam book question without knowing whether it benefit or hurt, brought more money into the system, less money into the system, was good for parties, bad for parties, and I simply said it is a neutral question where you have a statute that is replete with a certain phrase except for one provision, how should we interpret the one provision? I think the better of the reading is probably that it doesn't apply there. But as the vice chair said, there are various Latin phrases for such things.
Commissioner Walton.
Thank you. So I've got the same concerns as you know from the last go around, and I appreciate the footnote or proposed footnote, but it only really says that I don't think it really addressed the issue that we seem to be expressing concern about in the Office of General Counsel's as well, that in our own quote, we may not do through another what it cannot do directly, and that does appear to be structurally what was happening. And the footnote says we will have two separate independent entities created, but that doesn't address the issue of either agency or alter ego. It does say that you'll have independent. Just because two organizations are formed doesn't mean one cannot be an alter ego of the other. That's an equitable remedy that occurs based upon, you know, the facts that, you know, a given jurisdiction may want to use where they implement that equitable language. But are you saying that Jobs can't act as an agent in this case?
Under what standard? A parent agency.
Well, I mean, you're using the word that the statute excluded, exclusio.
We have the Latin phrase.
I want to know the name too. Yeah. But you're making the argument that phrase is intentionally left out here, and therefore it can be used as that agency is permitted. And I mean, is that the point here that this can be an agent? And will be?
My point, and I don't mean to be non-responsive to the question, but having sat through and dealt with hours and hours of this commission's decision on agency, that is a very complicated topic. And it is one, if you want to identify which portion of the statute you mean, there's fundraising agency, there's McCain-Feingold agency, there's collecting agent agency. This commission has spent a lot of time on the concept of agency, and part of why I am loath and have thus far not taken several invitations from commissioners to assure the commission on agency is that then I didn't need an advisory opinion. I mean, honestly, then I get an FEC complaint over which standard of agency and whether it's fact specific. Then I have an advisory opinion that got me nothing. So the question is, if the commission deadlocks, then frankly, you need to do a rulemaking, because there is no rule There is no agency in your rules. There's no agency in the statute for this provision. There's no agency in your rules for this provision. And the commission has struggled over time with agency in different contexts. So, Commissioner, if you want to specify for me which concept of agency you are asking me, we can start a dialogue about whether it would be agency under one of those standards. But draft B doesn't tell me which standard you're using for agency.
Well, generally, you can talk about an agent as being someone that will do what they act on your behalf. And so, generally, whoever acts on somebody's behalf at their direction in that is authorized to be an agent.
So only with actual.
No, there's authority. Apparent agency. There's implied agency, actual agency. Three types. True. But the argument being made here is that that phraseology was excluded, and therefore, for some reason, the agency issue is removed from the table.
That's correct.
I just ask that, therefore, it's removed from the table. What kind of freedom does that give? I mean, absolute freedom to just act on one's behalf. I mean, this is structured for a reason. And the two officers are there for a reason. It's not just any old people that are going to run this thing.
They wish to engage in political activity in connection with state elections. And the question is whether the Federal Election Commission regulates that activity. I mean, that's at its core what the advisory opinion request asks, is if two individuals who work for an organization that seeks to elect governors, seek to set up an organization to affect elections of governors, and we give you assurances that we are not trying to engage in activity to affect the election of federal candidates, is that permitted? Is that permissible under the statute as written? And I agree with the vice chair. I wasn't arguing McCain-Feingold's constitutionality or any of that. That's for the courts. I agree with you.
You're agreeing with the vice chair or the chair at that point?
The chair. You said that the courts decided. I'm not trying to unsettle anything that any court has said about this. It's the law is the law. What the courts say, good, bad, or indifferent. I don't know how else to get at this question, because there isn't an agency provision in the statute and there's no agency provision in the reg, so I'm not sure I know what agency provision we would be importing, because this commission's had different agency provisions for different sections where there is statutory and regulatory authority.
I was thinking of perhaps seeing if you'd consider embellishing that footnote to some degree. I'm not necessarily inclined to give you the language, but something to the effect that it would not be engaging in any conduct that would be construed as acting as an alter ego for the other or as an agent for the other, period. Something like that.
Well,
I'm just throwing this out for discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not really saying yes, I'll do this.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I want that. But let's talk about it anyway.
So, Commissioner, you have stumped the band as we did last time on the alter ego. I thought, but you know more about alter ego law than I do. We went back and we looked at corporate law in D.C. and I thought what we cited was the relevant law that deals with alter ego / piercing the corporate veil. You may tell me that, in fact, we have misunderstood the alter ego piece of this equation, but I'd want to understand if it is not the law that we cited. I guess I'd want to understand what alter ego, there is no federal alter ego law as far as I know, as I understand it. But again, you may tell me I'm wrong. It is a concept of state corporate law. And if there is some explication of it that we've missed, I'd be open to that. Agency, I have to say, is I don't see a statutory basis for importing agency here, and having at times asked this commission to do things that I thought made sense, but were not in the regs, and having been told often by this side of the dais that they may make sense, but they require rules. I think this is one of those places where I'm going to respectfully suggest that if there is going to be an agency concept, the commission probably needs to make a record of that through through an administrative rulemaking process, if it can find the statutory.
There's authorities. A lot of rulemakings we should be engaging in.
But on the alter ego, so I'm not
on top of our list.
Yeah. So on the alter ego, I'm not sure the answer is no, but I thought that that was dealt with in the in the supplemental material we provided.
Well, you did point out that you have two separate entities. It doesn't mean that the very nature of alter ego means that there's two entities anyway. But it's just because you don't have a case right in point. You know, the doctrine's been out there for a long, long time, and it has general parameters that could fit here or may not. And they're not really excluded by the language that is included, you know, that you did cite. I'm not saying, I think there probably is. You probably picked up all that there is maybe for D.C. I don't know.
I mean,
yeah. And it's not incorrect, but it does set forth the same undercurrent of considerations. So I was just throwing that out for discussion. I'm willing to consider this, something along that line, and maybe want to think it over. And if you want a hard vote now, I would not be able to support it, but I'm trying to figure out a way to thread the needle a little bit.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could ask a question of my colleague, Commissioner Walther, just a little bit more about, I have a proposal, but kind of the parameters of what you're seeking here. Are you desiring that there be some language put in that footnote that would say they would not be acting as an agent, or what is it that you're that would give you comfort in this particular situation?
Well, I think I'd have more comfort along the lines that I mentioned if we were to say something like, just pick up the language and say, and don't pick it up verbatim and say, okay, Mr. Walther, this is what you're going to do. But I'm suggesting that if we said, add a sentence and say, with respect to the activity covered by this, neither will act as an alter ego or agent of the other. I mean, that seems to help give some comfort, if that's what we're calling comfort. Do you want to think something like that over, or experiment with the language, and the magic words don't necessarily have to be in there, but
so I think if alter ego is what's on the table, that's something I think we can look further at. Like I said, I thought that this was born of ignorance, not any effort to skew this. We discussed this last time, and my understanding is that the concept of piercing the corporate veil and alter ego are joined concepts, so that the law we cite, you are an alter ego when you are under the dominion control. In other words, the standard we set in that brief is the standard for alter ego, but I may be wrong about that. I this is not at all my area of the law, and if your staff have ways to flesh out what alter ego, what is that means in D.C. law, that's, presumably working state law, that is something I'd be happy to continue to dialogue on. The agency concept, candidly, I have to say, honestly, I would rather the commission deadlock because you're never going to win an agency case. I mean, I don't mean that as a. You got to be careful telling your regulator what they'll win or not win. I don't even think you'll bring an agency case. It isn't in the statute, so I'm not going to sit here and agree to import agency from a provision isn't, because honestly, the non-federal world. The world of non-federal candidates, non-federal committees, they act as agents of each other all the time in connection with non-federal elections, and I assure you they don't have in mind the Federal Election Commission when they do so. So when the DGA works with the DLCC to run a program so that state legislators and state, are they each other's agents? When one state candidate for mayor works with a state candidate for governor, are they acting as agents? That's just not a standard that, honestly, I want to be responsible for bringing in, because you're going to have an awful lot of mayors and state legislators and before you with FEC complaints citing that provision of an AO. So if we can do this without agency and we can do this with alter ego, I'm happy to keep looking.
Well, I mean, we have some basic language here that, you know, we've cited, you know, supported, has been part of FEC common law, call it that, where it says courts will disregard the fiction of a separate legal entity when there is such a domination of finances, policy, and practices by the parent that the subsidiary has no separate existence on its own and is merely a business conduit for its principal. We also then say, that was in Park Federal Savings Bank, we also say a entity may not do through another what it could do directly, what it could not do directly. That's Act Blue. So both alter ego and agency, I could see scary off, especially the use of the word agency, but you can see where we're headed here, and that's kind of...
So I think we actually have agreement on the first of those two, because the first of those two is actually, I believe, that standard of exercises such dominion or control. That language, I think that actually is taken from, because I think we cited that language back to the commission. I think that actually is taken from the piercing the corporate veil. What was the, I don't have language in front of me, the footnote we proposed, I think actually says something that tracks that line of authority.
I think the footnote only points out that you form two separate entities. As I can tell.
Just to be helpful, since I have it in front of me, what your comment proposed was the footnote could read, quote, this conclusion is premised on J&O remaining a separate legal entity from DGA under Washington, D.C. law. If J&O were found to not be a separate legal entity from DGA under Washington, D.C. law, J&O could no longer rely on this opinion.
Which I think is, if you read the rest of what we submitted in writing, what would cause them to be found not to be a separate legal entity would be the dominion control, you know, language. In other words, that's a conclusion based on D.C. law of when you are two separate entities, which is, I think, roughly equivalent to that language in the bank MER. Does that make sense?
Well, anyway, those are my concerns. I don't. I'm open to some expansion of that. Maybe that's worth talking about. I don't know how anxious you are for this decision.
But, you know, I'm always anxious.
We have a way of putting things over, as you will know.
I'm always anxious for a good decision before. Honestly, since I'm not going to probably be the one negotiating, right? It's going to be you all talking to each other. You should probably tell me whether it's, yeah. If I could convene a meeting and negotiate it out, but something tells me you probably want to move on to the rest of the agenda.
Be careful what you wish for.
There is that, Commissioner Hunter.
Commissioner Walther, does your expansion of the language include adding agency or not?
I was trying to see what, I mean, there may be, maybe that magic word doesn't have to be included. I just don't know. I haven't tried to figure out how to phrase that.
There's some version of it. Even if that magic word agency is not in there, you want to bring the concept in.
Maybe agency is you know, for...
That's probably not going to...
Just too broad in terms of you know, other kind of conduct as well. And I did, I mean, I said with respect to the matter covered by this, as opposed to matters not covered by this, it's not of concern.
I think, but, it's fair to say we'd be willing to discuss expanding, as you characterize it, the language of the footnote, if it only includes the concept of piercing the veil and that sort of thing. But to the extent it goes to agency... or some version of it, that's probably not going to garner four votes.
Well, I'm open to discussing it.
I'm sorry?
I'm open to discussing it, see what we can come up with.
Without the agency?
Well, I'm not saying that language, the idea of a control is, you know, a fundamental aspect of agency, but it's also part of the way they look at the alter ego concept. So.
But the alter ego is obviously a lot stronger than agency.
Why?
Because you're not just acting as an agent, you're really one and the same as the other entity. And what I think we're all willing to write around is you're not the same thing, but we're not willing to say you can't act as an agent because we think you can.
Well, I did ask that question, and the reason that I understood it is because of the concern that we have a lot of different agency definitions. I'm not so sure I agree with that. I think we have not what is agency, but how you get to agency, like implied agency and apparent agency. We've covered that in some regs. You know, apparent went out, implied went in. And I thought apparent should be in, but it didn't. It just was got implied. And so, I mean, we've threaded that needle before. But so I was thinking of using different language, but I'm not going to try and divine exactly why that would work.
Okay. I think any version
If you say
of
I can't
that.
Talk about any aspect of it, then, you know, maybe it won't do it again.
Sorry?
If you say it won't, you're not going to talk any aspect about an aspect of agency, then I'm not sure we're going to get anywhere.
Okay.
In the interest of...
But
promoting some kind of agreement, even if I'm not part of it, because I generally believe that four votes is generally preferable to fewer than four votes on an answer.
Amen.
I'm glad you agree with me on that.
The statute says for AOs. I mean, isn't that really, you don't
well,
get an AO unless there's...
No, that's right. That's right. But I, you know... never mind. Let me just inquire whether perhaps Commissioner Walther is thinking or could be comfortable if the AO, if the footnote incorporated some of the language from the Park Federal Savings Bank conciliation agreement that talked about domination of finances, policy, and practices by the parent such that the subsidiary has no separate existence of its own and is merely a business conduit for its principal. And I don't know whether that would bring people together or not, but I just, since people are sort of talking around
I think we're getting close to that. I mean, I'm really talking about this particular aspect of its existence, not that you will now disregard that corporation from all other aspects of its conduct. So incorporating it in the broad sense is not what I'm really thinking of having to try and do. But I tend to think we probably could figure something out, but it might take a little bit of back and forth on how to do that. I don't think we should... I mean, I'm not inclined to try and do that today with everything else that's going on, but, you know, it depends a little bit on where you, what you're, if you need the vote today, then we probably just vote it up. But.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm certainly open to, I'm always open to trying to figure out if there's a way we can thread a needle to find agreement. Where it's possible, and if there's some additional language on the alter ego element of this that that gives additional comfort, I think that there's probably some room for some further consideration of that. I would just reiterate what Commissioner Hunter said. I think that the concept of trying to bring the concept of agency either directly or indirectly by trying to, you know, write around the word agency, but functionally bring it into this context, I wouldn't be comfortable with because as I look at this provision and as Mr. Elias has pointed out, Congress knew when and where to apply the concept of agency, and in fact, they do it in this exact paragraph. I mean, it starts off talking about amounts expended for federal election activity by state and local committees of political parties, and then parenthetically adds that that includes entities controlled by a state or local committee of a political party, and an officer or agent acting on behalf of such committee or entity. So it had, Congress had agency on the brain when it was drafting this. It's not like this was included and then there was some assumption that maybe agency would apply or not apply here. I mean, the concept of agency is directly included in this exact provision. And then it says it includes associations of candidates for state or local office, for state or local office, or of individuals holding state or local office. And there is no equivalent parenthetical put in there. I think that that's very relevant in this context. Congress put this together in one particular time. Like I said, it had agency on the brain, and it decided to put the parenthetical behind when referring to state and local committees of political parties, but didn't when discussing associations of candidates for state or local office. And that's, I agree with Mr. Elias that if we were to go back go back 10 years to find out what Congress intended, I think that Congress didn't intend to include agency in this particular provision. But even setting that aside, the greatest example of what congressional intent is not from floor statements, it's not from, you know, committee reports, it's from the actual language that is voted by a majority of the congressional body and actually signed by the president. And that language, as it's before us, includes agency with respect to state and local parties and doesn't with respect to associations of candidates for state and local office. So I just don't see how we get around that. And that's the reason why I think this is an easy question on this particular issue. So again, I'm more than willing to, you know, if there's some additional language that can give us comfort on the alter ego theory, you know, in addition to what Mr. Elias helpfully provided, I'm certainly open to that. But I attempts to backdoor agency into this particular provision would, at least for me, would not be something I'd be willing to go along with. But I'm certainly willing to. Hopefully, maybe we can find some agreement on somewhere along the way on this particular AO.
Madam Chair, may I?
Mr. Elias, please.
And that's the reason why I appreciate how hard the commission has worked at this, and I don't want the commissioners or the staff to think anything other than that, because I really do. But I have to say that Commissioner Peterson, in a matter of 2 minutes, did a better job explaining this than I have done now over the course of what is probably several hours. And it is the reason why I have brought so much passion to this, because if you look at the provision, to me it's just not a close call. They put agency in one section and didn't put it in the other. And it's the reason why I am reticent for the future to put a concept of agency in this advisory opinion, because we are then at that point now importing a concept that specifically was left out. And when this commission did its rulemaking implementing this provision, the commission didn't put it in. So it seems like this is a very, very dicey place in an advisory opinion process to now say, well, Congress didn't put it in the statute, notwithstanding the way it's written, and the commission didn't put it in its implementing regulations, but here we are. So I appreciate what Commissioner Peterson said, and honestly, it is a better explanation than I think I've offered so far, and maybe a clearer sense of why I feel so strongly that this second question is such an easy one.
I agree with you, Mr. Elias, that Commissioner Peterson is very pithy, and his explanation was succinct and very informative. But it is a harder question for some of us than for others. I think in general we do our job better when we try to find four votes for something rather than just kind of throwing up our hands and disagreeing. So it sounds like maybe people want to try to work on this a little bit longer. Commissioner Peterson?
If I could inquire of counsel, I'm assuming we're right up about the end of the 60-day deadline, so we'd obviously have to get an extension.
Yeah, the deadline is Monday.
What do you say then, Mr. Elias? You want to give us
if the commissioners believe that they are going to come to resolution or likely kind of come to resolution, then I will confirm during a break with my client. But I'm sure that's not going to be a problem. If on the other hand, you know, this is really a question for you all in the first instance to know whether you feel like more time would be useful. Last time you thought more time would be useful. If the commission feels more time is useful, then I'll ask the client. I'm sure they'll consent. But I don't want to say I think you should take more time. Do you understand what
I hear you, Mr. Elias, and I regret that I thought that extra time would do it for us. It appears not to have. I don't want to make any promises to you and your client either. I mean, it sounds like maybe there's a possibility.
Well, I think it was more useful than not. How's that?
We may
warm up to an agreement on this at some point, I can't say, but I mean, it sounds to me like we're getting close.
My question is to the chair. It sounds like you're not interested in...
I am probably further away from you than Commissioner Walther, but I do find this to be a very difficult one, so I wouldn't say that I am irrevocably lost to the cause.
Okay. Well, if it's okay with Mr. Elias and his client, then we're happy to look at whatever proposal Commissioner Walther and the chair come up with.
If I can just confer. Oh, good.
Sure.
I think the vice chair.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you. Just the timing, though, is still troubling to me. When did you first file the request? I can't find it in my file.
The initial pre-AOR came in on June 12th.
June 12th.
And it was complete on June 25th.
Okay, so whether one looks at when it was first filed or when it was quote-unquote complete, that's 2 months already. We've had two meetings now. You're talking about gubernatorial elections. You have some of those in a few months.
We do indeed.
These folks that want to do this probably want to be relevant to that. The point is, we keep not wanting to do it today or, not inclined to so do today. That are we going to call the registrar in New Jersey and say we're going to hold the election off for a few months? I'm being serious. I mean, this is people need guidance in real time, and I appreciate trying to get a deal and all that, but at a certain point, we have to keep in mind that the world doesn't revolve around what we do here. There's an election that comes and goes whether or not we get it together, and at a certain point, we need to let these folks know one way or another. So can we do this? Can we be certain to get this at maybe the next meeting, or can we have some sort of end Fisher Cut bait date? Because I don't think it's fair to request her to sort of get in an open meeting and say, hey, can you give us an extension when you have an election, date certain away? Because that exposes us to, people could criticize us for playing games on that front. I don't want that to happen because right now the states that are in the hot seat for gubernatorial races are not the ones that are. Politics are weird, right? I mean, it's the Republicans here are the ones saying you can go do this, but yet on the gubernatorial ballot, it's the R's that are sort of the incumbent governors, So it's backwards from the usual politics. But I just want to make sure no one thinks that the timing here is it all suspect on my part, but because it's not. But you have an election coming up, so can we at least commit to having this ready to go one way or another next time? Or maybe sooner than that, or what can we do here? Because this is taking way too long to begin with.
I think Mr. Elias is rightly looking back at us. Your question is not.
I'd come back tomorrow. you tell me what timing is, and I'll like I said, I'll confirm it with my client. I don't even know candidly when you meet next.
I think it's September 12th. I believe that's our next open. Let me confer for a moment.
Thank you.
Let me propose this. I think the vice chairman raises certainly a pertinent point, and I recognize that the vice chairman was ready to vote last time and ready to vote today. But you know, if we voted today, we wouldn't have four votes for anything. That's just the reality. And I think there's a possibility that we could come up with four votes, but I can't promise that. So let's ask for an extension till the next meeting at the latest, and if we can get a proposal that people agree on before then, we can always post it on the website as a draft, give you an opportunity to comment, or anybody else who wants to comment on it, and schedule a tally vote if we think we'd be ready to go before that. I appreciate what the vice chairman said, but on the other hand, my sense is that Mr. Elias would, if there's a reasonable chance that he might get a yes instead of a split vote, that he'd probably prefer to get that, and his client as well.
I will. So the date we are asking until is
September 12th.
September 12th. Okay.
At the latest.
I'll just confirm that. And can I? We don't need to. I can just let your.
Yeah.
Them know. I don't need to be here.
No. Not unless you want to be.
No. I feel like I've had enough.
You're always welcome.
Really?
Sure. All right. Let's try that. So with that, we will hold this matter over, hopefully to definitively resolve it one way or another soon. Thank you, Mr. Elias, for your patience and your participation.